Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears off and running with you on this Thursday, June the 10th, 2021. 17 and a half minutes past the hour. And what is exciting to you? It is the 7th anniversary of WWGH Radio. 7 years later. You know what I was thinking this morning as I was driving in? It seems, in some ways, it seems like it's been 7 years, and in some ways, it seems like it's been in the blink of an eye that this station was started 7 years ago. I remember the first day 7 years ago going on the air, and it was exciting and a fun idea to be the only, the second only talk station ever in this area in the 81-year history of broadcasting. So it does seem like it's been 7 years. And then again, it seems like it's been the blink of an eye. And then I was also thinking, you know, one of the most celebrated television series in television history is the Mary Tyler Moore Show. And Mary Tyler Moore was only on 7 years. Another very popular show, Golden Girls, 7 years. A lot of shows run about seven, very successful shows, top 10 shows, run about 7 years for whatever reason. That seems to be a magic number. So to be doing this show for 7 years now is exciting in a way, because what I remember in the beginning, starting a radio station was a very ambitious idea, because you come into a market where there had been a radio station that was very dominant, an iHeart radio station that had been dominant for 80 years. And that's like trying to displace Coke or Pepsi. And when we started, that station had they had three stations going in that building, and they all had some kind of local live programming. The AM station had two morning guys and a newsman. The FM stations had morning men who were live in the studio local. And here we are 7 years later, and there's one guy left doing a local show on one of the music stations in that building, and it's not even really geared toward the Marion community. It's more geared toward the Upper Sandusky community. I also think about the local newspaper, the Marion Star. 7 years ago, they had the same office they had had for many years in downtown Marion here. They had a rather big staff. They had a local editor on staff. It was President Harding's newspaper, and now 7 years later, really, they don't even have a local office anymore. And the editor operates out of another city, and pretty much they only have two reporters at the Marion Star. And again, this is not their fault. It's just times have changed. And I looked at the other stations like this that came along about the time we did. And both of them, over the seven-year history that we've been here, have pretty much primarily always been music stations. I guess they have had talk programs on from time to time, but primarily they've been music stations. We have never been anything but a talk station for 7 years. That's a lot of water under the bridge. Also, when we started this station, it was very important to me to record everything we ever did, because one of the things that annoyed me working for two of these other stations in town, the long-term iHeart radio station, which I was at for 5 years, and then one of the other stations, which is no longer here, WDCM, for a few years, nothing was ever taped. And that was always sad to me, because newspapers, the archives go on forever and ever. But radio, if you don't tape it, you only have a memory of it and maybe a picture, and that doesn't say much of what the broadcast was. So the fact that everything has been taped in the last 7 years, that's quite an archive now, 7 years later. This show alone, we figured out, as of this morning, has been on the air 3,640 hours. We've gotten together 3,640 times as of this morning. The only days this station is not on the air live each year are New Year's Day, Christmas Day, Labor Day, the 4th of July, and Memorial Day. We only take 5 days off a year. And Thanksgiving, 6 days. So, and there have even been times where we have been in here on New Year's Day. We have been in here doing shows on 4th of July when it falls during the fair. So even those days have not always been days off. A lot of good, we've been to the Republican Convention in Cleveland in 2016. We were at the World Series that the Cubs won against the Indians in 7 games. What a World Series that was. We have broadcast from Pittsburgh and Manhattan and great cities here in Ohio, Cleveland, Toledo. So many things to remember that have been so much fun. And the guest list, the people who have been in this studio over the years for extended periods of time, Lulu Roman from Hee Haw and Gallagher, legendary comedian, spent 2 weeks with us a few years ago. And it's just been great. And the people who have called in over the years have been tremendous. That list is rather, rather long. From politicians to news people to entertainment people to comedians. It's just been a run. And so what I guess maybe is most proud this morning to say is that after 7 years, see, in the beginning, there were many people who said, are you nuts? A new radio station in Marion, Ohio? A talk station? We have a talk station here that's been here for 80 years. This is nuts. Well, 7 years, I think, would be considered a success. So, whatever happens from here on out, this to me was the point that you always wanted to get to. 7 years. That's the Mary Tyler Moore point. That's the Golden Girl point. That's the point that a lot of popular television shows never made it to. A lot of popular radio shows never made it to. And we were on the air every day of the pandemic. Every day of the pandemic. We've had live local election coverage every year where we do not break away until we have winners in all the local elections, 7 years of that. And tonight we will have our 7th anniversary party. We have done these parties every year. Tonight will be the 7th one here on WWGH Radio. It's supported by Domino's Pizza, telephone number 740-383-3030, and the L&P Cake Shop, telephone number 740-382-1991. I'll be here tonight. Angie Ever, Sean Kraft, Terry Tackett, Adam Lepp, Linda Sims, Pastor Whitaker, Nate Redman, Glenn Coble, and Pastor Craig. Also, 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow, will be in the studio tonight. The man with the golden voice, Ted Williams, will be in the studio tonight. And as of last night, I talked to somebody, and they're possibly, if they can get here, it would be a big... It would definitely be a name you've heard of. certainly statewide, and to a certain degree nationally, that might be in the studio with us tonight, but I'm not going to announce that because as I talked to them last night, I'm not sure if they are going to be able to make it, but they did ask for the address, and they have been in the studio before, and they hope that they can make it tonight. Now, also, something I want to say this morning very quickly. We have advertised that Bobby Ray the Kazoo Man will be here tonight to provide musical entertainment. Now, Bobby Ray lives in Columbus and currently does not have a mode of transportation. So, if we can work that out between now and tonight, he will be here. If somebody would be willing to get him and take him back when it's over, that would be great. We'd love to have him here. I think he wants to come tonight. It's just going to be a transportation problem, and I want to lay that out and be very honest with you here this morning. If we get that transportation problem worked out over the course of today, he'll be here, and if we don't, we're still going to have fun tonight. So if anybody is interested in transporting Bobby Ray, let me know, because he was here a couple weeks ago in studio for the first time and really tore the house down. Now, what I mean by that is the listeners loved him. They loved him. They loved him. They loved his music. And we hope we're able to work that out tonight. But if not, no big thing. We'll have him back at some point, I'm sure. But again, if anybody's interested or willing to do that, just let us know, and we will work that out. You can send me a message on Facebook or however you would like to do that. But again, that would be totally up to you at this particular point. So that's the way the cookie crumbles. Now, as we continue here on our 7th anniversary morning. Remember, 3,640 hours we've gotten together on this program. We've got some special guests planned for the morning. Now, our first guest up here this morning is without a doubt one of my favorite people. And I have no problem saying that because I think you can disguise if you don't like somebody in an interview, but you cannot disguise when you like somebody. It's harder to disguise that. He was one of the best White House correspondents there ever was. I think President Bill Clinton would say that. I think President Richard Nixon would say that. He was a bona fide personality on television that everybody knew during the 1980s and 1990s and into the 2000s, with appearances on the top 10 news magazine Primetime Live, as well as the hit Sunday morning show with David Brinkley This Week. And then he was the host of that show with the late Cokie Roberts for a few years there, as well as being a part of election coverage and many great moments in the history of ABC News. He has been on this show countless times. It's always a pleasure to have him on because his analysis is concise and enjoyable. So here on the 7th anniversary morning, what a pleasure it is to welcome to these microphones again the man himself, Sam Donaldson. Sam, how are you?
Well, I'm okay, Scott, and by the way, congratulations. 7 is a lucky number at the dice table in Las Vegas, and I want you to keep going.
Well, you know, Sam, I was thinking this morning as I was driving in that shows on television that were very successful, much like Mary Tyler Moore, they only ran 7 years. So 7 years in broadcasting is a good long time.
Well, yeah, it's a good long time. It'll never top 60 minutes, of course, which started in 1968 and is still there. Different people, but it's still a great program. And these programs that do have a long run are there because people want to watch them, and they want to watch them because they're good.
Sam, what do you make of radio today? You know, it predated television. It's been, really, it was the pioneer of broadcasting as we know it today. What is the state of radio today?
Well, I think it's very healthy. There was a time several decades ago when people were poo-pooing the idea that radio, as a really great commercial and, of course, as an informational thing, it was going to continue to exist. And of course, that fell by the wayside. As you know, and as people who listen to radio know, it's very indispensable, particularly in the cars.
Well, you know, I think about this a lot. I wonder how the radio got married to the car, because that was a marriage that has kept radio alive forever.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, it clearly can be married to the car easily from the standpoint of the technical ability early on. Although I guess my first automobile when I was in college was a 1939 Packard, used car, of course. I paid $75 and I gave my wire recorder to a buddy who let me have the car. And there was no radio there. There was no ability to have it. But, you know, radio, as I don't have to tell you, is the most intimate form of public communication that there is. Well, yes, if you talk to someone face-to-face, you see them, and if they haven't used body deodorant, you may have a different sense for them also. But in radio, Scott, I don't think, I know we haven't met, and I don't believe I've ever seen a picture of you, but I have in my mind's eye, just from your voice and from the way you carry yourself and what you say, the kind of person that I like. I mean, particularly when you flatter me with all those things. Radio also has the ability to move people. Well, television does also, but look at the radio hosts that are national. The late Rush Limbaugh, not my favorite guy, but he had a huge number of fans who listened to him. Rush used to say, when they would credit him with political keenness, he said, "I'm an entertainer." He said that almost to the end. He said, "I'm an entertainer, and I use politics." That's quite correct, but I'm there, frankly, to entertain the audience. Now, if you don't believe that, if that doesn't sound like the Rush Limbaugh that you remember, go look it up. He understood what he was doing and how he was making his money.
You know, I wish I could remember who said this, but I always thought it was a great quote that television gives you the picture, so you know what people look like. You see it, it's right in front of you when there's an interview going on. But with radio, not only do you have to listen, but in your mind, as you say, you kind of have to come up with what's going on because you don't see it, so you commit more of your mind to that conversation than you would on television.
That's right. I mean, it's pictures in your mind that you put there because of what you hear, the tone of the voice, what is said, of course. I think I have, and we're not going to explore this right now, I think I understand you to a large extent over the times that we have been together. I think you do a very good job letting your guests, certainly letting me, spout off. I try to keep within certain boundaries, but you let me give my opinion, since people know that's what I'm doing. You ask intelligent questions. You know what's going on. You don't inject yourself into my answer by saying, "That's right, you're correct," and or, "No, that's foolish," which, of course, would drive me away if you say look at that. You have the touch, and the touch is very important.
You know, Sam, when it comes to a guest, it is fascinating in a way that radio, for the most part, and maybe it's just a phase, you know, everything goes in phases, but when did the guest become a prop? I've never understood that. Why would you have somebody on if you just wanted to tell them they were wrong?
Well, because you want to tell them they were wrong. Many, many years ago, when Sean Hannity was doing radio as well as television, he would invite me on his show, and I would go on it, certainly. I'd met him. He was, for a long time, ABC syndicated him. I think that changed, obviously, with Fox and what have you. But the last time I went on, I just said that's the last time. It was after the election of 2004, several weeks afterward, and I was prepared for Sean to ask questions along his conservative philosophy and talk to me about it and argue with me. That was just fine. But what he wanted to argue about was the fact that John Kerry was a terrible, terrible person. Well, I said, John, Mr. Kerry lost. He lost the election. George W. Bush was reelected. Let's talk about something else. I think people know you're, oh, no, Kerry, this guy. And I thought to myself later, well, heck, I don't have to do that. And then there was another guy, I won't mention his name, but I sort of like him, and I used to go on his television program. And I would get ready, I'd go down, and I'd, put on a little makeup and all of that, look presentable. In those days, we all wore ties. And he would ask me questions. He was a man who knew politics, and he thought I knew something about politics. But he would say, well, what do you make of the fact that X is doing this? And I'd say, well, it seems to be that X... Well, no. And he would interrupt and say, well, what is X? It's clearly doing this, that, the other. In other words, finally I said to him, look, the next time you invite me, why don't I just sit home? I'll knock down another, glass of Chardonnay or something. I'm not going to put on any makeup. I may not have even shaved that day. And listen to you. I think you're smart, and I like to hear you, but why do you have me down here when you want to answer all your own questions? That made no sense either.
Mm. You know, Sam, I think about this. For people who have watched you for many, many years, in the 1980s, the conversations that you used to have, debates with George Will on the Sunday morning show with David Brinkley, in your opinion, how was that different from what radio and television became in the Sean Hannity, Bill O'Reilly era?
Well, there had been syndicated programs, Gronsky and Company, etc., with a panel of reporters, usually, arguing and discussing issues of the day. But I do believe that the first network roundtable in which reporters who normally in their day job would be trying to keep their views out of their work, I certainly made that attempt, would be expected to give their opinions. And when Rune Arledge, our boss, when the Brinkley show started, said to me, okay, I would like you on the panel, I said, well, Rune, isn't that a problem? At the moment he was saying this to me, Ronald Reagan was trying to get Congress to authorize a new ballistic missile, intercontinental ballistic missile. Then we had the Minutemen, we had the Triad, we had planes in the air all the time, we had nuclear weapons on submarines plowing the ocean ready to fire, but he wanted another missile. And I said, I'm against that. You expect me to go on Sunday show and discuss with George Will, who wants to build a missile, why I think it shouldn't be built, because I think it's an overkill, to use a phrase. And then on Monday, I'd report from the White House and report on the president's latest gambit to try to get Congress to approve the money. And people would say, well, he's not really reporting that fairly. I'm sure he's shading that because I know his view. But Rune said, let's just see how it works out. Well, as a matter of fact, it happened to work out. I would argue with George Will, and frequently we'd agree, but quite often we'd disagree on policies. And we didn't call each other names, by the way. Not only was there no vulgarity toward each other, but it was clear. I mean, the nastiest thing would say to me, well, Sam, I know you liberals always want to spend money or something like that. And I said, well, George, I know that you conservatives want to spend money, but not on things that help people. That's the way we'd argue. But it went on, and it worked, because I discovered over the number of years that, yes, people didn't agree with me. They agreed with George quite often. But instead of saying, well, he's just a liberal Democrat, and he's got his own views that he's trying rather giving, they said, well, I think Sam's wrong. But I think he probably thinks it's right. I think he's right. In other words, he's not issuing propaganda because he's for one side or another. That's his view of a situation. So in that extent, it worked out. But of course, today, I don't need to tell you and your audience that it's not that way. It's so different. And the animosity, and I dare use the word, the hatred toward our fellow Americans that you hear on some of these crosstalks on public opinion is regrettable.
Sam, with about 4 minutes left in this segment, talk has gone through some changes on radio and television, especially in the world of politics. In the beginning, it did seem like no matter which party you were of, you would go on a talk show to try to get your opinion across. And then it became, well, I'm only going to go on a show that I believe the person is going to be fair. Now we're starting to touch in the area where I'm only going to go on a show where I know the person is favorable to me. It's not even fair anymore. What has this done to the country?
Well, I think it's done to the country what you see, which is many people now subscribe only to their favorite politician or their favorite prognosticator and don't bother to check whether the facts that they are told are facts or facts indeed. In other words, there's no ability that many people are not trying to cross-talk the talkers. They're just simply accepting on faith. And you know I'm talking about, to a large extent, the prime example is Donald J. Trump and his followers. I think a lot of his followers are very good people. I'm not bashing a Trump follower per se, depending, of course, on whether the follower is, God forbid, a Nazi or someone fighting the Civil War and get those dark people down again. But if all you do is listen to one view, mine, anyone's, and you don't check it against others' views and make up your own mind, everybody's mind has some quality of ability to say, well, that doesn't sound right, or no, but look here, the guy says the moon is made of green cheese, but the astronauts were there, they saw no green cheese, I better check my view on that. And today, I think both sides, or all sides, are filled with people who just simply refuse to listen to the other side, look at the other side's data, look at the other side's statements, and check it against the facts. I mean, the apple falls down. Newton's first law of gravity still is in place. So if somebody tells you, no, the apple's going sideways, you say to yourself, no, and it is a cross check.
Sam, with about 60 seconds left here, whether you are in New York or California or Ohio or on the internet or however you do a talk program, what makes a good host?
Well, I hate to flatter you, but you're a good host. I've already talked about it. You invite people on that have something to say and that you think is something that people would want to hear. Whether they agree with it or not is not the point. You let the person give their views. You restrain them if they get wild, of course. You could argue with them only that you're not certain that, you know, the green cheese is there because of what the astronaut said. But you do it in a way that is not attacking your own guest while you have a guest on to attack. I think a good host picks people that are interesting to the person's audience and lets them give their views.
Sam? It's always been a pleasure to have you on. It will continue to be a pleasure, and thank you for joining us on this 7th anniversary.
Good luck, Scott. Keep going.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. The legendary Sam Donaldson. You can't go wrong there. There's one of those surprises on 7th anniversary morning here. All right, and we've got another call coming in, which will continue to be a lot of fun. We certainly thank the legendary Sam Donaldson for joining us the last 15 minutes. Now, to wrap up our first hour, we have one of my favorite people. Every time he is on, we get a lot of reaction. And 7 years into this program, 3,640 hours, it is a pleasure to welcome a man who has spent a few of those hours with me. He is considered by a lot of people as one of, if not the greatest talk show host of all time. He was able to do something that I don't know anybody else in the history of talk was able to do, and maybe somebody can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but he took very serious guests, very serious politicians in the 1970s, 60s, 80s, and into the 90s, and he put them on entertainment programs, and he put them on with entertainment people, sports figures. It wasn't always sell my book, sell my CD, sell my record in those days. He's the only guy that I know who did that and kept an audience because the guests were entertaining and he was entertaining. Just ask Gore Vidal and Norman Mailer. We'd have to get a Ouija board, but you can watch the video on YouTube. What a pleasure it is on the 7th anniversary morning to welcome back to these microphones the legendary Dick Cavett. Mr. Cavett, how are you?
I'm hoping your introduction will just go on and on. I'm really enjoying it. I'm excited as you can be, and I know that's the most overworked word in our business, that you're having a great 70th year.
Well,
I get it wrong?
I like the sound of that better.
Were you an infant when you started? What age were you when you faced the microphone for the first time?
You know, this show has been on 7 years, but I've been on quite a while now, so I was in my early 20s, but if it's the 70th anniversary, I must have interviewed the doctor who delivered me.
Well, I hope to be with you on your 70th anniversory. Do you have a parade of stars coming on today to, people you congratulate you and people from your past and people from your family and any former presidents of the United States?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You have come on after, just moments ago, we had Sam Donaldson on, who's great.
Oh, how is Sam?
Sam is good. Sam is down in New Mexico, and he is as sharp. I tell you, he could go right back to the White House right now and do as good a job as he ever did.
I always thought he was just a crackerjack journalist. Yeah. Well, is it too late to get him on the phone and give him my regards? When your day is over, I mean.
Yeah, we shall do that. He's come on a lot, and what is fascinating about Sam Donaldson? Was he ever on the Cavett Show?
Well, you know, he must have been. Yes, I'm sure he was. I mean, I've been on something with him, and I assume it was my show because I remember kept watching him put on his makeup very professionally. And gotta be.
Isn't it funny the things we remember? We don't remember the interview, but we remember the makeup room.
Yes. Oh, God, yes. Well, when you said politicians, you know the thing you get tired of most of is, who's been your most interesting guest? Well, how can you say that when there are thousands of them? But I can, I'm eager to answer who's been my worst guest.
Oh, who was that?
Well, let's see. His name is has 6 letters, 5 in the first name, and 5 in the second name. Now, I don't think it would be nice, really, since I've said that, to tell you who I mean. But his initials were Spiro Agnew. did you ever have the pleasure of having that was an interesting time, wasn't it? Because we had 2 crooks in the White House, Nixon and Agnew, at the same time. Both of them should have ended up wearing striped pajamas. And sometimes it seems so long ago. I mean, sometimes I'm a little nostalgic for Watergate because there was always something in the air going on. The aforementioned Gore Vidal said, every morning I wake up, I have to get my Watergate fix. And that was true. It was a wonderful time to be in broadcasting.
Did Spiro Agnew at that time, did he bolster the ratings? He didn't seem to do a lot of talk shows.
I don't know. They put him on, this was earlier on, before they discovered that he was a cut person, a brigand, and a thief. And they said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to put a lot of caricatures of him on a tack board and put on the screen. And as we go to each of these different caricatures, since he's been caricatured by everybody, Herb Block, all the top people. You and he will, of course, have interesting things to say about them. So I go to this dreadful attempt at conversation with him goes by, and finally I go to the board, and I said, here's the first one. This is, in fact, the great Herb Block. And I noticed, like, all of the caricatures, they seem to make your eye just a little short, straight line. And he said, yeah. That was the high point of the interview. That was the best part of it. He was...
What?
Said, now, you know about my anagram curse, where my trick brain rearranges letters and words, and it used to amuse Gore Vidal, because his name can be at least 30 anagrams. Rival Doge, and Gad I Love Her, and I Love Drag, and Rebel of Oliver, and it just, he loved that. But Agnew, going back to him, as he was leaving the studio, and as he said goodbye and got in his car and pulled away, my Spiro Agnew anagram struck.
What did we get?
Want to hear it?
Oh, yeah.
Check it out.
Well, there you go.
Again, I think it was Gore Vidal who said you could also make it grow a spine, but yours is better.
You know something I saw recently, Mr. Cavett, was Robert Mitchum. Now, Robert Mitchum, on other talk shows, people had trouble. I saw Larry King interview him. It did not go well. I saw Barbara Walters had him on. It did not go well. You seemed to get an interview out of Robert Mitchum. Why do you think that happened? Was he difficult?
I don't know, but it's certainly true. And quite a few people told me, you better be careful. You're gonna try to sit there for 90 minutes with Robert Mitchum, who, if he answers at all, answers with monosyllable or something. So let me have another run at that monosyllable. And I guess it might have had to do with the fact that I admired him so and liked him so much. And I really don't know, but people said, you're committing suicide to give him on. He was wonderful. And I got a letter. I got a letter from his sister, and she said, I have to congratulate you. That's the first time anyone has made it possible for people to see my wonderful, brilliant, well-read, music-composing, humorous, about 16 adjectives. And he lists all of them. People were stunned to know that he had written an oratorio that was performed at Hollywood Bowl. You couldn't name anything Mitchum hadn't read. And he's just a wonderful, brilliant guy.
Larry King thought he was a put-on. Now, knowing what you know, that you could get an interview out of him, do you think he was putting them on by giving them a bad interview?
I really don't know. I'm sure he probably had some dull ones, hated doing it, hated being told to go plug a certain movie that he might not even... Well, that's one of his complaints, was he had claimed to like movies he was in that he didn't like. But what's so great, frightening thing? Key Largo, no. What's the stunning Mitchum movie? And the leading lady gave an interview, and she said at the end of that, when he comes at me in that boat and would come to cross the room, and I was sure I was going to die. He's the perfect actor.
You know, and it is a sad thing, and I don't know how many... When he died, there was a little bit of coverage because Jimmy Stewart, I think, died the next day.
Oh, that happens.
Yeah.
The same thing happened with Groucho. I think Elvis Presley, I think, died the same day Groucho did.
Oh.
And so he got about a 16th of the amount of attention his death should have gotten. I think both Woody Allen and I, without knowing it, wrote complaining letters to Time magazine saying that don't need to take anything away from Elvis Presley, but a great, great artist died, Groucho Marx, and left him off. They apologized in the next issue. They got so many complaints.
That time is interesting because Johnny Carson and Joey Bishop and other people who were doing talk shows, Jack Parr, really loved Jack Benny, and their admiration for Jack Benny was great. But your admiration, see, not that you didn't have admiration for Jack Benny, you did great interviews, one with he and Bill Cosby, which really should go to the Museum of Television. I hope it's, if it's not there, it's headed there. But you were...
Go ahead. I remember that show vividly. Yes.
Oh, but you were Groucho Marx. Where they all worshipped Benny, you had Groucho Marx. What was it about him? And did you have the same reverence toward Jack Benny?
Yes, not the same, because they were different performers, different personalities. But yeah, I had great affection and admiration for Jack Benny. He liked coming on. He was always fit when he got to the studio to do a good show. He was just so professional, so perfect, so skilled. A funny thing happened with him on my show, and I don't know if everybody noticed this, but he was talking about money and things of insurance policies. I don't know how we got on that subject. And I remembered a joke that he had done about insurance, but it didn't come to his mind at that moment. And I thought, this would be perfect. So I said, do you have a lot of insurance, Jack? He said, well, I could tell you a lot about that. Yeah, and he still... And I gave him another hint. He got that hint and said, have I got insurance? When I go, they go. And it's a huge hand. And if you see that bit, as we're going to commercial, you see him shake my hand.
Well,
give him a wonderful joke.
I think there'll be a great irony in the story you just told, because in the 7 years of this program, and I always hate to put a guest on the spot like this, but in the 7 years this show has been on, you told one of the funniest stories early on. It's still one of my favorite ones. Fat Jack Leonard and Jack Parr.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Now, can you recreate that? Yeah, give us that. That's the most tremendous story.
Jack Leonard was a so-called insult comedian. He was a very funny man, a very fat man. He was known as Fat Jack in the business. And he had a set of machine gun delivery, and it could overwhelm the host. But that Jack one night said, I'm going to get Jackie Leonard. You know, he said to me, you know, you have to say something, anything, and then he comes back at it with whatever he wants to say. You know, I had a diet and I lost more than you are. And on and on. Jack said, listen, tonight I'm not going to come back. I'm just going to sit there. And Fat Jack came out, and he's very popular and did a great stand-up and sat down with Jack and started his talk, and he threw a line and Jack didn't say anything, and he threw another one and Jack said nothing, and he began to panic. He couldn't figure what to do. He had no place to go. And he started to perspire. And it's a moment I'll just never forget. He was so trapped in his, character and thwarted. So eventually he just stopped talking, but he had to say something, and so he just reached for a fact. He said, you know, my wife is an acrobat, and Jack said she'd have to be.
Oh, Lord, that story holds up. Oh, my goodness. And one other moment, and I don't know if you'll remember this. You were on the show with me one time, and we were talking about Bob. You got the greatest interview out of Bob Hope that anybody ever got. But Bob was uncomfortable talking about his money, and we were talking about on the phone Bob really did not like you asking him questions about that, even though he answered them. And during the interview, you said you had your chair propped up against the wall, and the chair went up from under you while we were doing the interview. You dropped the phone, and when you got back on, you said, "That must be Bob saying shut up about my money."
What, your memory really ought to be enshrined somewhere. That's one.
Well, that doesn't happen very often when you're on the phone and the chair goes up from under somebody, but that can only happen on radio.
Well, it was a nice moment, but the fact is, as you said, he was scared. His head writer, Mort Lachman, said, you know, when that stuff came out that he had $500 million or whatever, he thought he was over, that he was finished, that he was through. They'll never laugh at me again, he was saying. He even took more drinks than he usually did. He was not a drinker at all, really, Hope. And he said, relatives are going to come to my house and cut open the mattresses and try to find the money in it. But he was genuinely panicked. Somebody fortunately reassured him, and he went out and did the mattress joke and others. It was fun.
It was great. Before we run, and we never have enough time, but what makes a good talk show host? Now that you look back at it, many talk shows, many networks, many years, many great guests, what's the key to this?
Just being able to realize that you're going out there with nothing really totally planned, and just think, I'm just going to talk. I don't know what's going to happen. I didn't know if I would be able to do it when I first did it. The very first show I did, I was waiting for the red light to go on to come back from a commercial break, and we had a man on who was an ant expert, nice old fellow, funny. We came back, it was time to introduce him, and instead of saying normal introduction, I heard myself say, "No show is complete without an ant expert." Got a big laugh from the audience, and it reassured me that maybe I'll be able to do this.
Well, everybody knows who's listening to this. Dick Cavett goes up on Mount Rushmore of talk show hosts, and I think we probably still use that guy. Talk shows are like meat factories. We don't throw anything away, you know. We use it until it's completely gone.
Oh, yeah.
The end.
But it's... Jack Barnes told me when I was starting to do this show, "Kid, don't do interviews." And I said, "What?" He said, "Don't do interviews. That's what's your favorite this, and, you know, the one fact after another. Make it a conversation." And really, that's a good thing to learn.
And advice from a guy who did it well.
Story about the kid who reached up to get a box of BBs out of his mother's kitchen cupboard, and he spilled the BBs, and she was giving a big dinner party for a lot of women, and so he's panicked. Here's her beautiful bean salad that she's made, and it's full of BBs. So he stirs them in, party happens, they all like the food. The bean salad is a big hit. Well, in fact, one woman calls her back and says, you know, that was just a wonderful lunch. The bean salad was marvelous. The only problem is when I bent down to pick up my cat, I shot my canary.
And that's a good topper to hear at the end. That's a good topper to this conversation.
Yes.
Dick Cavett, you are...
Anytime you're double, use that. Say again.
Dick Cavett, you are one... I'll steal that anytime. But you are one of the best, one of my favorites. And I do want to make sure to say that I want to thank your wife, Martha, who has always been so kind to me in helping negotiate these interviews. So thank you for all your...
Are you speaking of Martha, my lovely wife?
I was. I thank her so much.
Yeah. She's good. She ought to have a show, really.
She should. And you will come back with us, right?
Okay. Well, will you have us back on your eighth beer?
You will be back, hopefully, before that, but you're already booked.
Okay, man.
Thank you. Stay well.
Great congratulations to you.
Thank you. The legendary Dick Cavett. There you go. Here's Break. We'll be back in 15 minutes.